for the development of AI. So ultimately, even if you think that you're being very proactive and politically rebellious or whatever on Facebook, everything you say can and will be used against you, right? So like that, for me, I mean, I'm just speaking personally, that's kind of like a disincentive to engage at all with that platform or platforms like that. But it sounds like you're suggesting, as you have along the wall, that you can work with and not against the inherent vulnerability. So are you suggesting that, for example, in a case like Facebook or Twitter or other corporate platforms like that,
well, I think
ultimately, like, more expression is going to be better for community than less expression?
Well, yeah, but I'm not advocating for community here either, right? Like, I'm talking about a difference between community and publicness. I'm certainly not advocating for more usage of Facebook, right? I'm saying that there are certain structural affordances in what could be that are not being exploited by platforms as we know them, right? Because they are also not accountable to publics, they are accountable to corporate shareholders. So this sort of imperative that we imagine that they're going to become accountable through to governments around the world is kind of ridiculous, because they're businesses at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So there's a incongruency there. What I'm trying to suggest is, and you know, perhaps it's a little bit of a pipe dream, because of course, how does one deal with the dominance of these monopolies that have emerged? And that's a real question. I mean, there are people that have discussed the possibility of, you know, what would planetary scale collective ownership of these? Is it now so big that it's a utility? You know, there are, you know, precedents in the past where certain things get so big, electricity grids, railroads, etc., they become nationalized. Obviously, this cannot be nationalized because it's not belonging to a nation state, but perhaps would there be a mode of collective ownership, therefore collective governance of such a thing, where you would maybe have a say in the nature of the exposure, right? Because in the end, the data itself is actually could be extremely powerful back in the hands of us, right? If it's anonymizable, if it's rendered anonymous, right? So it can't be weaponized against you, but it could be used for other, you know, in a very interesting ways for governance concerns, you know? So I think this kind of treating this data abstraction as per se evil is, to my mind, a bit like cutting off your nose to spite your face, you know, like where maybe there's a more imaginative way of how do we use it. It's much more tricky, and of course one can just extract oneself from this, but on the other hand, these social networks are extremely powerful. They have, you know, I did an interview with Eva Majeska for PAM, who's been one of the, you know, very active in the Czarny protest movement, the anti-abortion protest in Poland. And this would have been impossible without Facebook. Do you know? So there's this kind of really ambivalence about it.
Right. And then some cute little ad campaign will get started targeting people who think like this and express themselves like this. And well, that's what kind of disgusts me, you know? Because,
yeah.
It's as you say, it's a hard line to walk, because even if you want to express yourself in a variety of ways on these platforms that you feel might ultimately be beneficial, all of that information, your whole personality, is prototyped, and then people such as yourself will then be targeted by some very clever ad campaign. So the less information they have, the better it is, honestly. And it's highly disturbing to me personally. I thought maybe you had some suggestions, but I think it sounds like it's still a big question for you too about how.
Well, yeah, I think, but I do think, I mean, the thing that I'm a bit concerned about is this idea of withdrawing from this possibility. Mm-hmm. Because I think that this is I think that this is not available to everybody. I don't think that solution is scalable, because there are types of activism that advocate for, you know, retreating from the gaze of surveillance, from biopower and so on, go to the countryside, become self-sustainable with the community and so on. My question to that is always, like, I feel we need to be thinking about the planetary repercussions of our behavior. And if one, if an idea that I have for a particular form of how should I phrase this? If the idea I propose couldn't be scaled up and made available to other people, then I don't feel that it is a sustainable solution. So, for instance, if I take an example of, let's say I retreat to the countryside around Berlin, grow some food, have a community and become self-sufficient and withdraw from technologically enabled society at large, is that solution available to across the globe? Are there arable conditions across the globe for everyone to have food security in doing these things? Like, I think these are real questions. I would rather see a different, I think with a vastly different economic condition, these types of technologies could be used in a very different way. And so ultimately, you know, and you're absolutely right, you know, right now it's just utterly perverse because you could be the most radical, those radical ideas, in the end of the day, it just gets flattened because in the end, it's all data is the same, right? It's just another data point. But I think, yeah, ultimately you have to talk about radically transforming the economic condition in order for the incentive structures of these kinds of extractions to be vastly different than they are now.
Just follow that thought, because they do present themselves along with Uber, is another good example. First of all, they hijack our vocabulary, friends, sharing, you know, they don't really in a typical kind of way. But they also try to define themselves differently. Like Uber says, no, we're not a taxi system, we're not a transportation system, therefore we don't have to abide by those rules. We're just looking, you know, linking things up. So does Facebook. They refuse to be defined as a publisher because we've already worked for decades and decades and decades to have laws against, you know, libel. You know, you can't libel someone anonymously, for example. So I'm wondering, and it is idealistic and would be fantastic if we can develop our own platform. And I've always wondered why our research scientists hopefully wouldn't put more energy that way, because it's only taking that science and capitalizing it for one thing, and the other thing is we're not willing to pay. Like, I pay for my telephone, and that means that by law, no one can listen into my phone calls. But I'm not willing to pay, let's say, for a social media platform, and many of us aren't. And so that's the price we pay. And there's no question that data mining is like the future, you know, and promises all sorts of fantastic things we could do looking at these big patterns. But I'm wondering about your position on the nation state, because that's all we have, really. And, you know, if we actually followed the rules on libel and said, no, Facebook, you can't, you are actually a publisher, maybe things would be different. Or some people are working on transparency of data, which I don't know much about, but it sounds promising. So I'm wondering where, you know, on one hand this idealistic moment, on the other hand, we do have some mechanisms, they aren't being applied per se, but I did get the impression that maybe it's a misimpression that you think our consistent institution, or institutions that we did build up for the public good, aren't able to actually, and they aren't at this point, but are they really failing, or do you see them consistently failing in dealing with this issue?
Yeah, I mean, this is a theme that's like really a big interest to me, specifically about, because I think, you know, we're in a moment where there's a lot of, like, a pretty obvious, there's a massive geopolitical transformation going on, be that through the shifting of power in existing nation states, but then through also technologies, right? Like where, this is like some really interesting work from somebody that I think are like Ben Bratton, where, you know, you're addressing the fact that some of these platforms have started taking over some of the roles and functions of states in terms of like organizing information in many ways.
they're more powerful than most states, honestly speaking. And so there's this tension, there's this sort of tension between these two types of governance. So basically the argument is like there are, one needs to come up with a new, basically a new geopolitical design model in order to account for this. Because also, the things can't be contained within the nation state, right? You've got cables, you've got infrastructure, all of these things are like,
even the material data is another, but we still only have the nation state.
Yeah.
And we do have, we do even have existing laws that could be applied.
But the question is like how, you know, that's always a question of this kind of location, right? Because the laws that apply here are bound to a certain material sovereign jurisdiction when that is not the case, yeah? Like with every interaction, your signals are being relayed in different,
that is,
you know,
true,
geophysical
the
areas.
Demonstrated some leadership on that. I mean, they brought Google somewhat to heel.
Who is that?
The EU.
The EU?
Yeah. I mean, they have the right to, I mean, it's limited,
but it's
starting to flex their muscles, right?
Well, they're trying to tax them, they're trying to, but you know, like when that law came in, they also, Facebook put 1.5 billion users out of Ireland back into California, so, I mean, that's the thing, they can migrate a lot of these things. So, I mean, my personal position on it is that, you know, I think there needs to be a challenge because there's basically, as let's say the state of the US is losing its hegemony, but the corporate side is actually gaining, so there's still another mode of American dominance via California, and this is worldwide, maybe minus Russia and China, where they have their own platform structures. And that to me is something not to take lightly. But then there needs to be a countermeasure to this. So where is the EU Silicon Valley in terms of developing? Where are these challenges to this? And it's a really difficult, like pragmatic question. And you're right to think about. We have to start to think about what kind of tools do we have now at our disposal, but not lose sight of a bigger redesign project that needs to happen. Because I wouldn't want to get, I just happen to think that the enclosure of the nation state isn't going to be robust enough in order to be able to tackle some of these bigger problems of our time that can be contained. You know, even if Canada would have the most incredible environmental policy, progressive, which it's far away from doing, if I may say, you know, that's not going to mitigate against all these things because these phenomena don't have borders, right? So ultimately, I think we need to figure out some kind of other model. But it's a terrifying proposition because, of course, the knee-jerk reaction is like a one-world government. No one's arguing for that. I mean, that would be like the worst form of tyranny. So like, how does one figure out this problem of governance at a larger scale, basically? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I
interesting because you started off with sports and football, and then you moved on to internet-mediated changes and talking about community and talking about public, and so you kind of moved from a very much a body interaction between people and teams and football to a very disembodied sense of community and conversation, and I'm wondering what the role of the body is in this whole conversation. You're now talking about our planet and the ecology and exchange of ideas in a very disembodied platform. And our bodies are removed from that. We don't know physically who we're talking to anymore. Can you talk about that a bit?
I guess maybe I would preface it by saying like maybe it's more useful rather than talk about bodies, talk about materials. Because I think that's where bodies are of course material. So if we get a bit more general and just talk about materials, that sort of includes bodies. Because all of this platform stuff, although we always use this kind of language of immateriality and civic communication just happens, this is like rare earth minerals, this is like deeply an earth-based thing. This doesn't exist without digging stuff out of the ground, laying cables, all these things. It's an extremely material
energy-intensive process. So there is a kind of deep materialism involved in all of these things. In terms of bodies, I mean, then I would throw back the question, human bodies, other bodies, all bodies, what? Because I think also, you know, ultimately that's the other scale that we have to think about, is like, what does the world look like when we're not in the center? What does the world look like when it's not optimized in our image? And if we keep the focus on just the human body, then we're not considering all these other entities that are in coexistence, right? That are maybe not part of publicness in the way that we're talking, because I think that's fairly a human-based thing. But I think down the line that those other entities and forces have to be factored into a more systemic view of how to organize the planet in a different way. But I haven't really been thinking too much about the physical human body in space in this kind of scenario so much. I mean,
do you think that affects the dialogue, the conversation? Because this is all having a very disembodied, and by body I mean physicality, corporal, whatever, exchange, a sense of community without that level of physical interaction.
Yeah.
What does that mean about the kind of conversations that we have and our ability to change the physical world when we're having these sort of disembodied bodies?
Yeah, I mean, yes, on one hand, it is disembodied when you're actually at home, like, chatting with somebody. On the other hand, think about all the protests that have been organized. You know, it's just a point of convening. And then there's a somatic instantiation in another space. So, you know, in this way, it's kind of operating as a vehicle to enable that mass somatic bodily encounter to take place. So, I mean, yes, there is a degree of disembodiment, and I think there's a lot of people concerned about, you know, and we're still learning the effects on our well-being about all of this. There's certainly a lot of negative literature about the transformation of the human mind through all of these devices. But I would ask, like, I guess I would also want to know, like, how did we frame the body in others, like pre-internet theories of public space and so on, because that was also very much about, if you think about like Habermas or something, which was all about like a kind of rational, deliberative model, so this also feels quite disembodied, right? It's, so I guess my question is like, where has the body been in all of these theories? It would be an interesting thought experiment to trace that, because I don't think the past theories are adequately addressing it either, right? But it probably doesn't really give you a satisfying answer.
Just an observation, and then
I'm
just curious about how this, the way in which we predominantly see ourselves as being publicly engaged now doesn't usually include our bodies.
Right.
And so how is that going to actually change how we interact and how we think about the world?
If you think about the most sort of transformative protest movements in the last years, they haven't been just happening within a platform environment. They've been tools to organize and then manifest in physical space. And so I think that the body is very much alive there, maybe not at the moment of organizing, but in just enabling, like as a tool to bring people together to arrive there, right? Because in the past that was much more difficult. You couldn't organize a protest in 24 hours the way you can do now.
This just seems to move from a communications tool to like a sense of community, right? This idea of online community, but it's missing that physical realm. I just find it curious that you started with
something super physical.
Bodies like colliding out there, and then you said, over
yeah.
Here.
Well, that's because it was also
took us out of the body completely, which is perfect, because that's what's happening.
But it's also those were talking about other artists' projects.
Mm-hmm.
and they're wonderful artists,
yeah.
but I don't think that way.
But you chose to show it.
Huh?
But you chose
yeah,
to
yeah, and I love them. Yeah, exactly.
Have you done any full cost pricing of a platform like Facebook? When I talk about Facebook, I am impressed with Facebook's elimination of paper, especially in the community that I reside in,
mm-hmm.
which is music and art
mm-hmm.
events.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of events on Facebook, and I think about all the paper that had gone into advertising and in newspapers and things like
mm-hmm.
that. So all that paper has been eliminated, but I also heard another terrible fact that the internet is obviously run off generators and huge server farms, and it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that to keep the internet going up, they also run gas generators, because
mm-hmm.
at any time, the countries that these huge farms are housed in
mm-hmm.
don't have very stable power, so they have to be able to switch to backup power
mm-hmm.
at all times,
mm-hmm.
and the only sort of backup power that they have is gas generators.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if you did any full cost pricing, like you took into account that type of thing when you talk about
mm-hmm.
the environment. And
not specifically, no. I mean, definitely not. I mean, that's yeah. I mean, you know, I didn't know about this, like, backup plan. I mean, obviously it's a super energy efficient, but so is, you know, every time you interact with it, you make the hard drives spin, basically, right? So, yeah, I think the more famous or the more talked about example in the last couple of years, it seems to have died down now, is more the blockchain energy problem, right? The fact that the design of that cryptocurrency was not terribly scalable, and there are statistics about it, like, you know, something like the amount of energy required to mine these coins surpassing like air travel. There's something, I mean, I don't want to give you like false data. It's extremely expensive in terms of like energy consumption, not just money, but just environmentally. The internet is certainly, you know, playing into that. But I don't have the specific statistics for you, like what percentage of global electricity is being consumed. I don't know.
I was just wondering if that was
yeah.
the interest of you, that you were
no, but there
would
was,
like to explore for.
Yeah, there was one interesting thing that was more like fact businessy based, was that because given all this sort of free labor that we're doing on Facebook, or a lot of people qualified, they're like, screw you, I want to be paid for my labor, right? So, but then they're still very much within it. Thinking like that is still very much within a sort of capitalist paradigm, right? Like, I'm going to work, you're going to pay me. And the sort of brutal irony is your data as an individual person, and it's weighted by country, right? Like, Americans are worth the most, and then you go down the chain because everything is starting there and it's more and more targeted. But Canadians got to be pretty valuable as well. But when I say valuable, it's like something like $9 a year, $9 US a year. So people that are making these claims like, oh, I should be paid for this, it's like, what, $9 a year? What's the value is when it's an aggregate. That's when it's really valuable, and that's where the power lies in the users. It's like, not in the individual interactions you put in, but all of our stuff together and the patterns that emerge, that's when it gets valuable. And that's a really interesting thing, I think, to maybe mobilize around. Because to mobilize around each of us getting our $9 a year, probably I'm cheaper in Germany, you know, $6 maybe, why? But if we're really concerned about how data is used and how it can be used in different modes of governance in another way outside of a corporate domination, then we need to figure out how to activate based on that. And the power does lie in the collective, not in the individual.
We come together as communities and sell our data back to the big corporations.
I mean, I can't answer that question. I have no idea. And I just don't. No offense, but I don't want to think about it because I would rather, you know, see a much more substantial restructuring than just like, because I'm very concerned about the AI and machine learning monopoly. That's like way more concerning to me than.
Mm-hmm.
annoying ads, but yeah.
We're trying to make one more, and then we can open up and do a more casual.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going to bring back to the body. But do you have things about promiscuous promiscuity? There's the slutty hard guy. But you don't actually talk about the erotic at all.
The what?
The erotic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it would be really useful to look at sort of queer theory in the 90s with actually doing a lot of this work around network versus contact, particularly Samuel Delaney's work around the privatization of public space in New York City and public sex and cruising and commercial sex. And I see parallels with what you're saying around privatization and networks. And I think Delaney's work around the idea of interclass contact is actually a really generative and useful thing to think about in terms of some of the ideas you put through here. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Delaney's work or if you've been thinking about the actual bodies touching bodies in ways that are intimate and erotic when you're using this kind of language, but then you don't actually, you've done this very disembodied thing, which I was nodding a lot, yes, I'm talking about the body. And I'm not totally on board with the new materialism. I don't know if other people are, but I am interested in the human and, and human bodies interacting as opposed to sitting on a computer.
Sure. You just pointed out, I'm not a scholar of Delaney, so I can't give you a profound answer, nor am I a theorist on Eros, but certainly there is space in all of this. I know in a recent paper, the one woman that I was citing, Wendy Chun, I think she's got a new paper coming out in Pattern book called Pattern Discrimination, that's called Querying Homophily, so I think that would be maybe a where she's going into a little bit, going more to the queer theory to kind of address this a little bit more. But it doesn't happen to be my personal background. I tend to do more work in stuff concerning finance, computation, and so on and so forth. So I'm always very grateful for new resources and directions or angles or blind spots to kind of focus on. But it's not my particular, yeah, I wouldn't have anything to tell you. You probably have something much better to say about it than me.
Yeah, I was just curious because your choice of using promiscuous and pointing out the slutty thing that not actually talking about erotics or sex.
Yeah, promiscuous is a computational term root too, right? Promiscuous mode. So that's where the term kind of comes from. Obviously, there is this lean towards, because she's got this paper where she's talking about slut shaming and network patterns and vulnerability and what have you. So, yeah. There's a really nice passage in there about not necessarily from her, but from some feminist activist in India talking about the right to take a risk in public space, right? The right, and so that was where this kind of idea of vulnerability comes into it. But I'll check out the Delaney stuff through this angle. I'd be curious to go with that sort of vista. Yeah, thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah.